Good afternoon, everyone. It is February 27th, 2012, and it is 1:05 p.m., and welcome to Rules. I'm going to open up a work session on SCR 209A.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, SCR 209A comes to us after hearings on the Senate side. It recognizes and honors the achievements of Terry Jean Frohnmeyer. Forgive me if I'm not pronouncing that correctly. In a come-from-behind victory on September 15, 2011, Terry Jean Frohnmeyer of Salem became the first Oregon woman to win the United States Golf Association's Senior Women's Amateur Championship, defeating defending champion Nina Harden. After winning the title, she was named the 2011 Senior Women's Player of the Year by the Pacific Northwest Golf Association and the 2011 Golfer of the Year by the Oregon Golf Association. She was also recognized by the Marion County Board of Commissioners with on September 28, 2011, being designated Terry Frohnmeyer Day. In addition to these achievements, she's a successful small business owner, broker, and real estate investor, and has served on a variety of boards and commissions, including president of the Salem Area Chamber of Commerce. Senate Concurrent Resolution 209A recognizes her achievements.
So, Cheyenne, do we have anybody that has signed up to want to talk about Terry? And Representative Berger, I see your name is on this.
Mr. Chair, may I speak to the resolution? I'm a pretty good golfer, but mostly what I am is an appreciative of somebody who has true talent. And Terry Frohnmeyer has not only been a pillar of our community in terms of the work that she does, supporting our community, but she laid off golf for like years, and then she just took it up again and went to the top of the nation. It is a stunning achievement. That's the hardest game in the world, and to see her play golf is a work of art. I fully support this resolution in support of a great community member and a fabulous golfer.
Okay, well, thank you. Anyone else?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I move Senate Concurrent Resolution 209A to the floor with a do adopt recommendation.
Representative Hovey moves SCR 209A to the House floor with the be adopt recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none. Amy, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Beyer?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Freeman?
Yes.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Winger?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Holby?
Aye.
Co-Chair Kotek?
Excused.
Co-Chair Olson?
Aye. SCR 209A passes, and Representative Berger, do you want to carry that?
I would be so thrilled.
Okay, we will close work session on SCR 209, and we are going to open. Actually, we will reopen a work session on SCR 209. And Representative Kotek, co-chair, we're just voting on 209.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you, Mr. Co-chair.
Don't we have to suspend the rules?
Okay, go ahead.
I make a motion that we suspend the rules so Representative Kotek can vote on SCR 209A.
Representative Esquivel moves that the rules be suspended to allow co-chair Kotek to vote on SCR 209. Is there any objection? Seeing none. So moved. And how do you vote?
I vote aye. Thank you, Representative. Thank you, okay. Mr. Co-chair.
Thank you. So we now close that work session, and we're going to open up another work session on SCR 210.
Chairs and members of the committee, SCR 210 memorializes Jeanette Hamby. She's a former state representative and state senator, and she died on January 27th of this year at the age of 78. After moving to Oregon with her husband, Eugene, she earned a master's degree from Oregon Health and Sciences University in nursing education, and in 1977 a doctorate in vocational career education from Oregon State University. Shortly thereafter, she began her career in public service as a public health nurse and career education coordinator in Washington County. She became the first woman elected to the Hillsborough Union High School Board in 1971. She served on the school board until she was successful successfully elected to the Oregon House of Representatives in 1980. In 1982, she was elected to represent Washington County in the Oregon Senate, where she served four consecutive terms. During her tenure in the Oregon Legislature, she was a champion for the underdog. Using her voice to further the rights of women, migrant workers, prisoners, and other at-risk Oregonians, it was her pursuit of economic development throughout the state that led to the passage of the Oregon Earned Income Tax Credit, creation of the Oregon Progress Board, Oregon Business Plan, and the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. Upon leaving politics, she remained active in her community, continued to serve the public as chairperson of the Jackson Bottom Wetlands Preserve Board of Directors and on Metro's Boundary Appeals Commission. She is survived by her husband, Eugene, and daughters, Tara and Tanya, and you'll have to forgive me if I've mispronounced.
Okay. Thank you, Cheyenne. Do we have anybody that has signed
up? I don't believe so. The sponsors were notified, but in the interest of getting the bills moved out at timely, they appreciate that they're set for just a work session today. Okay.
Members, any? All right. Can I have a motion then?
Mr. Co-Chair, I move SCR 210 to the floor with a do-adopt recommendation.
Co-Chair Kotak moves SCR 210 to the House floor with a be-adopt recommendation. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so moved. Let me back up. Would you call the roll, Amy?
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Beyer?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Freeman?
Yes.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Winter?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair
Holby? Aye.
Co-Chair Kotek?
Aye.
Co-Chair Olson?
Aye. SCR 210 passes, and let's see, Representative Doherty and I have Representative Kennemer are interested in carrying that as co-carriers.
It can be adjusted later.
No, that's what I have. I've already discussed that with them, so
okay.
Those will be the two.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so we'll close the work session on SCR 210 and open a work session on Senate Bill 1559B.
Chairs and members of the committee, Senate Bill 1559B requires the Office of Emergency Management to allocate monies from the Emergency Communications Account to cities and counties for direct distribution to 911 jurisdictions as directed by the city or county. It requires each county to be credited a minimum of 1% of the balance of the monies remaining in the Emergency Communications Account after other required distributions are made. It takes effect the 91st day following adjournment. Sine die.
Okay. You don't have anybody signed up for this either?
No, but there are folks in the room to answer questions if there are.
Larry Hatch, I see you're here. Hasina, you're here. Okay. Come on up. Feel free.
I didn't know if that was a.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's a personal invite. Yeah, yeah, you're here.
Come forward.
Feel free to come on up.
For the record, Hasina Squires, on behalf of Oregon APCO NENA, an association that represents the 911 centers throughout the state of Oregon. I'm also here today on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon in support of Senate Bill 1559. This is a very simple bill. Any device capable of accessing 911 services is charged a 75-cent per line charge help defray the cost of funding 911 services. Those funds are then transferred. There's a big pot of them. 60.5% of those monies are sent to cities and counties directly to provide 911 services, and that funds about 30% on average of each local government's cost for 911 services. This bill would require that instead of cutting 276 checks at the Office of Emergency Management each quarterly distribution, we would cut 49 checks. There are 49 911 centers throughout the state. Cities and counties would designate where the money goes since it ends up at the 911 center anyway. So it's a good government efficiency. Streamlining will reduce the paper trail of tracing where the money went. The cities and counties still retain the exact same per capita distribution and the minimum 1% guarantee that each county has. So it only reduces the number of checks that are being cut. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
forgot where I was going to be.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hatch.
Co-chairs, committee members, Larry Hatch. I'm the assistant director at Washington County 911 and the legislative chair for Oregon Apgonina. And our membership supports this fully. We think it gets the money where it needs to be and get it there for what it's supposed to be used for.
Okay. Members, questions? Representative Berger.
How does it happen that it was being distributed to 200 and how many agencies? And was that a statutory thing? And so what exactly are we changing, if you understand the question?
Co-chairs Olson and Kotek. The difference and the nuance in this bill is, if you look at page 2 of the B. Engross version of the bill, what we've done is change on lines 38 and on line 38, the change is the Office of Emergency Management shall allocate the distribution. So the funding stream does not change. It will allocate it to the cities and counties, determining the dollar amount that they would receive. And the cities and counties will then say, will distribute it to the 911 centers. And that's the difference.
Is there any opposition to this?
Co-chairs Olson and Kotek, I do not know of any opposition. This measure is supported by the Oregon Fire District Directors Association, Apgonina Special Districts Association, and it is my understanding that cities and counties are neutral.
Thank you.
Representative Barhart.
Thank you. I just want to make certain I understand. On 2nd Street in Eugene, there is a 911 center. It handles 911 for all of Lane County, I think with the exception perhaps of Cottage Grove. Right now, if I understand you correctly, right now, the City of Springfield gets a check, the City of Eugene gets a check, Lane County gets a check, probably some other jurisdictions get a check, and then they have to all send that money on to the 911 operations. That's what happens now.
Co-chairs Kotek and Olson, yes, that's correct. So they're passing the money through for the purposes of 911 to each 911 center who they choose to contract with, whether it's a city. So sometimes it's in Representative Garrett's district, like City of Lake Oswego PD. They keep the money. They don't need to send it on for an entity that, like Larry Hatch in Washington County, they serve a number of cities, and so those cities are passing the money on to Washington County 911. And if this bill passed, the money would be designated by those cities to go straight to Washington County 911.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I get it. Appreciate it.
Okay, very good. Any other questions? Okay, thank you. We have Paul Schneider and also Scott Winkles, and I don't know if either one of you want to step up and fill in a little bit of the gaps for us, or if you're good to go with what's been said, feel free to come up.
Co-Chair Olson, Co-Chair Kotek for the record, Scott Winkles representing the League of Oregon Cities. We're officially neutral on the bill, but based on our reading of the bill, it doesn't change much. What it changes is that the OEM will now cut the check to the PSAP on our behalf. The money would actually still appear in a city budget based on our understanding of the current budget law. It's in a city that's paid, whose total 911 bill was $24,000. 11 of that, which was they received 11,000 from OEM, subtracted would give the difference to their PSAP. That relationship's not going to change. Their bill's not going to change. It's simply OEM sends the check. 79 of the subscriber agencies actually are having checks sent to them. The rest have opted to have direct pay.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Okay. We're in work session.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1559B to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Hovey moves Senate Bill 1559B to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Amy, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Beyer?
Aye.
Representative Westphal?
Aye.
Representative Keith?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative
Winter? Aye.
Co-Vice Chair
Berger?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Mulvey?
Aye.
Co-Chair Kotek?
Aye.
Co-Chair Olson?
Aye. Senate Bill 1559B passes, and I think Representative Sheehan was interested in carrying that. We are going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1598, or correction, 1588. My colleagues, you might remember before Cheyenne shares a little bit, this came over to us last week from
Business and Labor.
Business and Labor, thank you. And what I've asked is I've asked Alan Dale to come in and talk to us a little bit to clarify what this bill does. And then I think, Representative Esquivel, you were just going to kind of plug in a little bit, fill some gaps in for us on it. Okay, thanks.
Chairs, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1588 excludes persons who own and operate taxicabs or provide non-emergency medical transport from the definition of employment for purposes of unemployment insurance benefits under certain conditions. Establishes an effective date, 91st day after adjournment, sine die.
Hi. For the record, my name is Alan Dale with the Office of Legislative Counsel. Representative Olson, I'm sorry, Co-Chair Olson, Co-Chair Kotek, members of the committee. Well, actually, should I just, in general terms, just an outline? Okay, so for purposes of the unemployment insurance program, under the statute 65740, employment is considered to be covered and taxable unless it's shown to the satisfaction of the director of the employment department that it isn't. So there's a whole series of exceptions to this under the statute, 657043 to 657094. This would be an addition to that existing series, and it applies to the circumstances set out in subsection 1 of section 2, and all of them have to be true. So first, there's the kind of service. It has to be service performed in the operation of certain motor vehicles. The vehicles, then, are a passenger motor vehicle that is operated as a taxi cab or a passenger motor vehicle that is operated for non-emergency medical transportation. And those are defined below. The definitions section in subsection 2 is adapted from the workers' comp statutes. So leasehold is taken over directly, as you can see by cross-reference. The two kinds of vehicles are adapted. That is, it's made more narrow than the workers' comp, the comparable definitions in workers' comp, mainly by having a minimum amount of occupancy, and also restricting the degree to which these vehicles can be used to transport property as opposed to persons, people, and still get the benefit of this exclusion from the definition of employment for unemployment insurance taxation purposes. The third is that the person performing the service has to have an ownership or leasehold interest in the passenger motor vehicle that's providing the service, and the services have to be provided for an entity that is operated by a board of owner-operators elected by the members of the entity. What the way that originated is that the idea, what was presented to me is that there had to be basically a cooperative structure to the entity. And so I asked if it was cooperative under the cooperative statutes. No, not necessarily. And so I just asked, what aspect of a cooperative structure do you mean? And this is word for word what I was told. So that's how it works. You have to, it's a fairly narrow exclusion from the definition of employment and sort of fits within the other kinds of exclusions that are in that series. Any questions?
Representative Garrett,
just a comment.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, Representative Esquivel and I were in Business and Labor on last Wednesday. Of course, that was the last day we had to move bills out of policy committees. We were short some members. couple members were caught by surprise when an opponent of the bill showed up. This is a bill, as I understand, that's been very carefully and narrowly crafted after at least a year or two of negotiations. Is intended to apply narrowly to one company operating in Portland, in which the drivers own their vehicles and are independent contractors. It's not intended to be, you know, opening the door to reclassifying taxi cab drivers as independent contractors. So, if that's helpful clarification. In other words, we wanted to keep the bill alive. Our only option was to bring it here. We weren't prepared to move it last week.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, to follow up with what my colleague said, my concern was that it wasn't specific enough. And I'll tell you why. Anyone that's been on Business and Labor in the past, and we've done these, opened up the floodgates on the definition of independent contractor, I'll tell you, everyone and their dogs believe they should be independent contractors, and it gets to be quite a melee. Does this do that? I think it is specific enough to where it does not open up the door. What was interesting is to hear from the employment department themselves. I thought that was very interesting because this cab company's been around for 60-plus years. I believe 65 years, if my memory serves me correct. And when we asked the employment department, okay, after 65 years, why all of a sudden is this an issue? And the response was, well, someone must have made a claim for unemployment benefits. Okay, but you're telling me that in 65 years no one else has ever made a claim for unemployment benefits? There was dead silence. I don't know why we're even opening this and treating this any different than we have in the past, but we have for 65 years continued down this path, and I hope that this legitimizes it to the point where the employment department worries about their $300-some million that they misallocate instead of somebody scab.
Yeah, Representative Bowlby.
Thank you. I have a couple questions. So in terms of the payroll tax, then the taxi cab company won't be paying unemployment insurance for these workers. They're considered independent contractors?
Co-Chair Olson, Representative Hulvey, yes, that's correct.
So is the same true for workers' comp, FICA, and the other pieces of the payroll tax, not to mention, you know, payments to transit districts and things like that?
Representative Olson, I'm sorry, Co-Chair Olson, Representative Hulvey, it should not be. This is limited to Chapter 657.
Follow-up. So for purposes of unemployment insurance, they're independent contractors, but for purposes of workers' comp and other payroll items, they're employees? Is that what you're telling me?
Co-Chair Olson, Representative Hulvey, yes, although I might think of it differently. I mean, it is, they are independent contractors, but in a sense, you're not getting there. You're not designating, it will have the same effect as a determination that they're independent contractors, which for Chapter 657, that determination is made under the statute 670-600. It has the same effect, but that isn't what this is doing, really. It's saying there is an exception to the statutory definition of employment for purposes of Chapter 657. So I don't really see how the effects of it could spread beyond that, beyond Chapter 657, and to say that they're being called independent contractors isn't exactly what's happening.
So, follow up. I'm just trying to clarify then for other purposes other than unemployment insurance, they're considered employees.
Yes.
So, follow up. So, along those same lines, I know that when you're talking about employees, independent contractors, those sorts of things, and you've already said that you're not using any independent contractor statutes for the purposes of this bill, but they do address employment situations, and one of the big criteria is who's directing the work. if you're directing the work, you're considered the employer. If you're directing your own work, you're an independent contractor, not an employee. So it's my understanding that taxi cab drivers are, they get their dispatches and they're directed where to go on a daily basis by the company, the employer. And notwithstanding, you know, for me it's really confusing that we would have a one special structure of business entity that would be exempt from this, you know, provision of employment withholdings. I mean, that just seems arbitrary to me. I'm not sure what the question there was. Can you sort through some of that for me?
Some of it. Coach Earlson, Representative
Fulby. We can advise you of your
rights if you want to. Well, the thing about it is that this is bypassing the independent contractor determination either under common law or under the statute. So, in a sense, you're just not going there. And it is limited to this determination of what is employment for purposes of the unemployment insurance tax, and the purpose of it is to get away from that other statute and all the common law determinations of what is an independent contractor that have been sort of codified in the statute. So we're just walking away from it with this. But this isn't the only one. I mean, there is a whole series of different kinds of specific services that have been exempted for the same purpose with the same limitation that it is only for the purpose of this chapter.
So follow up on something a little bit unrelated. So basically a leasehold that has meaning under 656 is one of the requirements that I assume the taxi cab driver either owns his taxi cab or leases it from the company. Is that what's being described? So they have some sort of interest in that, maybe a lease option to own it eventually?
Coach Earlson, Representative Holvey, that's the idea. I'm not the person to grill about the specifics of those agreements.
I was trying to figure out if, you know, at the end of the leasehold, who has the taxi cab when somebody quits driving a taxi cab? Who ends up with the taxi cab?
Boy. Like I'm on a game show. I'm sorry. There are people in the industry who could answer those questions off the top of their heads. Okay.
Thank you, Representative Espel.
There's a couple things I think we're talking about here. One is that, to me, a lot determines on how you come and go from your work on a scheduling. And it's my understanding that an individual that works at this firm works under the umbrella of the dispatcher can come and go as they please. There's no set time frame. There's no set schedule. They, just like an example, I'm an independent contractor being a realtor. I can come and go as I please. No one sets my schedule. No one tells me what time to be there. They tell me when not to be there. So that was one of the big qualifications. And the other thing you talked about was a lease and or a company-owned or individual-owned vehicle. And that is the case, is my understanding, okay, with this company, that they either lease it or you own it yourself. So
hopefully I can answer some of your questions.
I mean,
well, to follow up with what Representative Espel just said, I mean, basically the terms of the lease would be plugged into the whole thing.
Yeah. I would, sorry, Coach Earlson. I would think at the end of something that is considered a lease and not a sale, there would have to be value left in the item being leased, and the person who is the lessee walks away, and there's still value in the item that was the subject of the lease.
Okay.
Mr. Chair,
yes, Representative Garrett.
I feel bad for this gentleman. He's being asked questions he couldn't possibly answer. But part of the answer to Representative Holby's question is that my understanding is that this, the company for whom this bill was drafted has a different ownership and operational structure than most other cab companies. Okay, so whatever generalizations may be true about how drivers interact with dispatch, et cetera, evidently don't apply to this company. And so they're asking for statutory return to how they were treated for the last 60-some-odd years, as I understand it.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And to follow up on Representative Garrett's question, how can this be so narrow it only affects one taxi company and all the other taxi companies are not affected? I mean, we have in the little town of Roseburg two taxi companies that do things very differently, neither of which the people driving the cabs are employees of the company. I'm just curious how this can be unique to their situation and not affect the rest of the taxi companies.
Co-Chair Olson, Representative Freeman. The intent was, well, the way it was drafted was not that it apply only to one company or even to a specific company. There were criteria that were listed, and those criteria were incorporated. I say it's very narrow because it deals with the kind of service with a specific kind of vehicle and even limitations within those kinds of vehicles, because it has to be primarily to transport persons and not property. There's an ownership or leasehold requirement, and then the entity has to have a certain kind of business organization. So those criteria were put in. I have never attempted to determine how many companies it would actually apply to. That wasn't part of the discussion. It was just, these are the criteria I can identify from having worked on similar kinds of bills, that this is pretty narrow. How narrow is a factual question.
Cheyenne, you had some thoughts.
Chairs, members of the committee, if I can help supplement some of Mr. Dale's testimony as well, that it may affect more than one, but it was tailored to a particular company is my understanding, but there's no prohibition. If a company were to organize specifically to qualify, that they could do that. Mm-hmm. So it could be more than one.
Okay, we're in work session.
Every year we pay.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Madam Co-Chair.
I move Senate Bill 1588 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Kotek moves Senate Bill 1588 to the House floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It may be no surprise to some that I won't be supporting this bill, either in committee or on the floor. I think it is unwise for us to create policy that impacts one business in a competitive marketplace where now all of a sudden they are not subject to unemployment tax and others are, being a point. And it seems somewhat arbitrary to me to identify a particular type of business structure that has an advantage as well. I know we have different tax structures for business structures throughout the case, but I would suggest that maybe all cab companies are going to start looking at this business structure so they don't have to pay unemployment insurance and, you know, take employment benefits away from employees down the road. So I think it's a slippery slope to do these sorts of carve-outs. And won't be supporting the bill. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Berger, did you?
Yes. I share some of, as someone who spends a lot of time on tax policy, I share your concern with exception making. I, however, just looked over that slippery slope. It's pretty crowded with exceptions to this particular provision. And it is difficult from where we sit to make policies in a one-size-fits-all, and sometimes exceptions make sense, and I am persuaded that I think this one does for a particular type of longstanding, this is not new, something new, taxi cab drivers are in a way sort of their independent selves. I will support this bill and understand that it is sort of an exception in a crowd of similar exceptions, the businesses that just don't fit in this box very well. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not certain that the material in lines 7 through 11 actually do limit this bill in the way that the proponent suggests. It looks pretty narrow, but there are several dependent ideas here that have to hook together to make it work. When you're talking about a business cooperative, which is I understand this to be, you're talking about people who have pooled their resources, set up a business, and then manage it together as people who are actually working in the business and also managing it at the same time, which I think is what this reference to a board of owner-operators elected by the members of the entity. So the people who drive these cabs also are owners of the business and elect the board of directors, may actually serve on the board of directors, although obviously they may not all serve on the board, depending upon how big the company is. I have some concerns about whether this actually does apply to only one business or whether other businesses might come along to sort of set up in order to deal with this. But one of the things that would be, I think, probably almost dispositive of the issue, which we haven't heard, and that is what the employment experience, what the unemployment claims experience is. Other companies that rent the cab by the day, that assign people certain hours to work, that take a portion of the cab fare in return for the use of the car, or all those kinds of things, that are owned by a sole proprietor or by a corporation owned by somebody who doesn't drive the car, I suspect have much higher unemployment claims experience. I make that up. I don't know that to be true, but I would suspect that they would, because if I'm an owner and I drive, I'm far less likely to go on to something else or to be fired from my job as an owner. That would be a useful piece of information for me when the bill gets to the floor. But I think for the purpose of moving the bill out of committee, I'm going to support it. I think it is a narrow exception. I worry about it. If the thing doesn't work out the way we think it is, I hope that we'll look at the issue again, although I recognize that once it passes the floor, it's going to be on the way to the governor.
Okay.
Representative Garrett.
Mr. Chair, I think some good points have been made here. I raised some of them myself at the previous hearing about whether we're creating an opening that will end up being larger than we expect. However, the fact that some interest groups who would normally be very vigilant in opposing legislation like this have decided they're okay with this bill satisfies me that it's been pretty narrowly and carefully thought through, and that they're not concerned it's going to lead to a parade of horribles with more, with an undoing of the statute. So I acknowledge the good points that have been made, but I think on balance we can support making a simple exception here.
Okay. Appreciate that. Thank you. Okay, is there a motion?
You have a motion. I have a question.
Oh, sorry, Mary. Excuse me. Okay. Those in favor, Amy, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Beyer?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Freeman?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Winger?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Holby?
No.
Co-Chair Kotek?
Aye.
Co-Chair Olson?
Aye. Senate Bill 1588 passes. And anyone here like carry it?
I'll carry it.
Okay. Representative Esquivel will carry it.
I won't accept any questions from. I won't yield for questions.
You want a co-carrier?
Especially from Representative Garrett.
Okay. Members, we are adjourned.
He and I have seen too much of this bill.